Welcome, welcome, everybody. It is Take Two Podcast, episode 33. Glad you all join us tonight. This is Craig, joined with a couple of the hosts tonight. The man with the plan, the champ that runs the camp, Nick himself. How you doing, Nick?
What's up, Craig? What's going on, fellas?
Did he say joined by coasts?
I think he meant coast to coast.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Coasters, I don't know.
Like a co-host.
Together. Oh, okay. I was gonna say we're all pretty much like on Bennifer. The East Coast.
That is true.
East. That other lovely voice here is our editor in chief, the Chaucer to our Knight's Tales, Tony. Hi, Tony.
Hey.
Hey. And then we have the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend, only person that loves him more than us is himself. Bo. Hi, Bo.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here.
Ooh, Barry White.
Wow.
Got Barry White voice back again. Wow, here we go.
Here we go.
Are. Let's do it.
That kind of night, guys.
That kind of night. It's been a three-day weekend. Feeling good.
Feeling good. So, yeah, so we got a lot to talk about tonight. We got a couple of reviews from Nick and Bo from some new movies that came out on Netflix and on out in the theaters. We're going to talk about that box office. We'll give an update on our summer blockbuster movie, Memorial Day films, get into some news, and then wrap it all up. And if you guys stay tuned to the end, we actually have a nice interview that me and Bo and Brian did with Amy Hargraves from 13 Reasons Why. She's also in the new movie Wonderstruck and Super Dark Times. She's pretty big now. She plays Clay's mom in 13 Reasons Why, if you haven't watched that. Or Kimberly in Brain Scan, if anybody else besides me watches that, remembers that movie from the early 90s.
Sherlock.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. With Eddie Furlong. That was a great movie. So we even talk about that movie in the interview. So, Nick, you got a review of a new Netflix movie for us?
Yep. I checked out War Machine with Brad Pitt this weekend. This is, I guess, one of the – I guess this is the first big budget Netflix blockbuster, as weird as that sounds, like movie of this year. Brad Pitt. And I think Will Smith has one that's coming out later this year also.
I think he's got some
Oscar or Hunting One.
Like, Bright or something like that. Well, Netflix dropped a lot of money in this film. Like, I think hovering around $60, $70 million, which is huge for Netflix original. And this movie is based on, is a fictionalized version of the book called The Operators that was written by Michael Hastings. And it's about, I guess, 2009, 2010, right after President Obama's first election, when he won his first term, he wanted to get the Afghanistan conflict under control with General McChrystal. So they turned that book into a dark comedy, and, you know, obviously changed the names and everything. And the author actually helped write the screenplay with the director, David Michaud. I know I'm butchering his name. If he's listening, I apologize. But so anyway, this movie starts.
He must have had a rough elementary school time with that name.
So, it stars Brad Pitt, obviously, Anthony Hayes, and John Magaro. So, essentially, like, you know, the backdrop, Afghanistan. They brought in General Glenn McMahanan, is Brad Pitt's character. And he comes in, he walks around like with his right hand constantly, like he's holding a cigar. Like an old school World War II general or something along those lines. But he's a health nut, so he wouldn't dare let himself smoke an actual cigar. Like, gets up every morning, runs 7 miles, only sleeps like 4 to 5 hours a night. It's just like he has this really crazy, odd routine. But also he has this plan that he can turn this around. Like, and he will not let anyone stop him. He has this vision of greatness for himself, and he's self-centered and arrogant. He's not arrogant. Just kind of a little egotistical, but he's not an a-hole about it. It's kind of weird. Like, he comes by it, like, honestly, you know, in a weird way, where he's like, he means well while being this way, but he just has this high opinion of himself. I guess to be a general, you can't go in with the mindset that you're gonna fail. But it's just weird. That part was done well, but the dark comedy aspect where they're going for, it was okay. It was definitely, I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on it. It just wasn't done well. And I think the reviews reflected that. I'm not the only one that felt that way. But, I mean, we've seen one war movie. You've kind of seen them all in that regard. Like, you had some action towards the end. And know, that is what it is. But like General McMahon, he got a Rolling Stones interview. Well, he got a reporter to follow him around, and that essentially led to all the issues that came up so far as he let his guard down with his inner circle with this reporter. And he wanted his arrogance. He wanted to be on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. I mean, he said that in the beginning, like you were, he said it like you were joking. He was joking, but he was dead serious. And he got on the cover in a way he didn't like it. So I don't want to give too much of the movie away. I can't go into really any details because once I start telling all the, you know, little bits, you can piece it together really easy what happens. But it just, you know, it was okay. I like what Netflix is trying to do with the new, with their blockbusters. Can you call them blockbusters if they're a Netflix original films? I don't know. It's they're big.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see how all that plays out because you don't get that return from the box office.
Yeah,
to know.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. What do you? I mean, are you really going to get more subscribers?
Yeah. Doesn't everybody already have it anyways?
Yeah. Apparently not. But I don't think this is going to be the movie that's going to make like, oh my god, I got to sign up for Netflix so I can watch, you know, War Machine. Yeah. You know, maybe the next season of, you know, House of Cards is starting. You know.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah. Was it just not funny writing? Or because I know Brad Pitt, has, you know, he's decent at some comedy roles he's done.
He did,
you know, Burn After Reading and stuff. Like, was he funny or was it just
Brad
not
Pitt
funny
did
writing?
A good job. He did a fantastic job. Like, you know, you can tell, I can guarantee you that $60 to $70 million, a big chunk of that was his salary.
Yeah.
He did.
Were there any like action sequences in it at all or no?
Towards the very end. That was okay. No, that was it, you know, and that's the thing that towards the end, they got into like some deep, like, you know, dealing with the soldiers and dealing with, you know, the insurgency towards the end. But like literally that was 10 minutes of the film. Mm-hmm. Mainly this was more of a political thing where he's trying to put together trying to get a bigger contribution of soldiers from the countries that's in the coalition. So he was politicking, essentially. That's what the big chunk of the movie was about, in his weird way, because he's not a really a politician. You know, he's a general, but then he's an oddball. So it's
The preview reminded me of The Men Who Stare at Goats. I don't know if you saw that one.
Yeah,
yeah, the one with Clooney.
Yeah,
yeah, it's kind of what it looked like to me, and like that dark humor and.
It's
we'll see. Yeah, see how it does. I guess. I mean, it's definitely an experiment for them, and I wonder how that payoff is going to be for them. I mean, I don't know how they even measure that number of streams. I don't know.
I guess. I mean, it's.
I mean, really, what do you have to lose if you're already a subscriber? You watch it. Who cares? You're paying, you know, $10 for the whole month. So.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to cancel Netflix because you hated it or anything like that.
Yeah,
so.
It's not as much of an investment as going to the theater where you got to pay, you know, $15 or more and all that. So I think people may be more apt to just watch these kind of movies if it's already part of your subscription.
You know? That's how I look at it. I knocked out 2 hours of my life watching this, but it didn't cost me, you know, $12 to go to the theaters to see it. I could pause it and get up and use the bathroom and not miss anything.
Yeah. It's almost like they know what they're doing by dropping it on Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't by accident. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like a new addition to the, you know, before I used to always be like, I can wait for DVD or whatever, you know, but now when these things come on Netflix like that, that's the first time anybody's seen it. So it's almost like a big new release. Mm. So it's intriguing. We'll see how that goes. Maybe this is the new way everything's going to be going.
I know the theaters are rooting for it to lose because the theater association does not like Netflix dabbling in the big budget films by any means.
Yeah, because you're not buying popcorn.
Yeah.
Not from them, at least.
That's where they make their money, is popcorn and soda and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yep. But,
well,
yeah.
speaking of popcorn and soda, I think Bo probably consumed some of that this weekend.
I did get a small popcorn and a small soda. I did not upcharge.
Who are you talking to? There is no way you got a small popcorn and a small
soda. I have proof. My wife is listening.
Do they have free refills?
Yeah, I was about to say. Like, it's
just of the large variety.
Is this like Starbucks where a small is actually a large?
Okay, listen, I actually had dinner right before going.
Venti popcorn.
Yeah, venti popcorn.
A venti popcorn. No, I just opted out of the bladder buster soda and the 2 gallon tub of popcorn because I'd had dinner earlier. So
But it's only a quarter more, sir. It's a quarter more.
I know. It's a quarter more, and you get three times as much. No, I don't want that much popcorn.
You got to think of it as job creation. You're giving some other 16-year-old a broom to clean up your popcorn you drop.
That's true.
Well, that's true. That's true. Sure. And for no telling how many of those kids I put through college based on how much popcorn I eat.
There you go. That's why when a movie's over, I just take my full bucket of popcorn, toss it on the ground and say, "You're welcome."
Yeah.
And walk out the theater.
I just gave you a job. Job creation.
You're welcome, son.
Or you can be like some of those other people that go and they find an empty large popcorn and they go out and get a free refill. Which I think is
kind of nasty.
Yeah, that's pretty disgusting. Yeah, disgusting.
I didn't know anyone did that, but like, well, okay.
I've seen people do it. It's not no, it's gross.
You've seen people do it, okay.
I've seen what I say?
Nothing. I've seen people.
I saw them.
Tell us about Baywatch.
Okay, well, Baywatch was exactly what everybody expected it to be. It was very funny. Dwayne Johnson is hilarious. I think he's funny. I think any comedy that he puts out, he's hilarious. His timing is great. His banter between himself and Zac Efron were hilarious. The women were hot. The jokes were funny. The inside jokes were funny. I thought it was good. It was fun. Mm-hmm. But I can see why it only made as much as it did in the theater. I know the show was really popular, but I don't know if it was exactly to what the show was. Because in the movie, you know, there are a bunch of lifeguards on the bay, but it seems like they want to do more than just lifeguard. It's like they want to solve. They're trying to be the police also. They're trying to solve crimes. They're trying to find out who. You know, they find little packs of drugs, and they're trying to find out where the drugs came from and who murdered and why these bodies are showing up. So they're trying to do the police's job. And the policeman, the banter between him and the policeman are hilarious because the cop's basically saying, "You're not a cop. Dude, this is – you just do the water." I mean, you know, there's no such thing as lifeguard's pursuit, you know. It's but it was hilarious. And little disappointment for the pervs. There was no nudity, but there was a lot of, I like to call it dick and ball jokes. They were pretty funny. But other than that.
And where was The Rock and Zac Efron? Did they have a shirt on at all during the movie, or were they just?
They did have shirts on a few times, but there were a lot of taking the shirts off, which, you know, I mean, it's sometimes it's ridiculous how these people do what they do to their bodies. It's crazy. It's like too much working out.
Now, Craig, you were a fan of the show, right?
I was, yes.
Was it FBI on jet skis? Because that's what I'm getting from the trailer.
It's more like, maybe like, remember that show Pacific Blue?
Yeah.
Where they would ride around on mountain bikes? Like, it was like that on jet skis. Or like 21 Jump Street on jet skis.
Yeah,
like,
it definitely seemed like they tried to up it for the movie. And
they definitely, yeah. I mean, that whole, like, just the previews, you know, because that's all I've seen. But when he's, you know. The Rock's jumping in water as there's like a tanker being exploded or something. Like,
yeah
that's a little much. They started to get into almost the whole
Wet and the Furious.
Yeah. They started to get into a whole like detective thing with Baywatch Nights.
Yeah.
For like the two seasons that existed, but
I remember.
Maybe that's what they were trying to do, spoof like both of them, like you know, a whole collaboration of both of them in the movie. But I thought it was great. They had a lot of. Spoofs on, like, the slow motion running.
Okay.
They had, you know, a couple of cameos.
Oh, spoiler alert. Yeah. Tell me. Do we see Pam Anderson? Do we see David Hasselhoff?
We see David Hasselhoff a couple of times.
Okay.
He has actually some speaking lines. Pretty funny.
Okay.
And Pam Anderson is just a quick visual at the end.
Okay.
And that's where they do some of the slow motion stuff, because she comes in all slow motion.
I think that's what she was for most boys our age in the late 90s.
Yes. Oh,
just
absolutely.
A visual at the end. That was a good one.
That was it.
Yeah.
Well, I usually close my eyes at the end, so I didn't have much of a vision.
Okay.
But, you know.
You know who I like that's in this movie? I just like to say her name is Priyanka Chopra.
Priyanka.
Oh, yeah, the one from
Quantico.
Quantico? Yeah.
She's
amazing.
Yeah, I like Priyanka Chopra.
Loved her in Quantico, and I definitely love her in this. She's definitely pretty hot. And you know who else I thought was Kelly Rohrbach? Oh, my God.
And what, you got Alexandra Daddario, whatever her name is?
Daddario, yeah. She's smoking out too. But that blonde,
Okay.
Ooh, he's amazing. But they, you know, they also have the nerdy guy who's like, you know, the whole thing starts out, they're trying to, they're holding tryouts for new lifeguards. Yeah. And they got a whole group of people, and they focus on, like, the really, you know, chubby, nerdy guy who tries out every year, and everybody loves him, you know. But they're just, come on, guy, you can do it. And then Zach plays a, he's a down-and-out Olympic gold medalist.
I heard about that.
He's Ryan Lochte, right?
Yeah.
What he is. Pretty much, yeah. But the thing with him, though, is, like, he's good. He did great in the single when he was by himself, but when it came to the team event, he let the team down, and they had like a nice little nickname for him because of what he did, and so his career kind of went straight down, lost all his, you know, money and all that stuff. So he's there for probation purposes, but you know, he has to do the tryouts, but it doesn't matter because whoever put him there, he's going to get there anyway. But it's funny because, you know, the little nerd dude is in love with the hot blonde, you know, and the comedy between them is hilarious. I liked it. It was a good movie. I like movies like that. Spoofs.
Okay.
You know, well written. I liked it. A little cheesy in times. You know, times you think you're looking at yourself and like, really? I mean.
Well, it's a Baywatch movie.
Exactly.
And if you go in and don't expect a little bit of cheese, I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. There was some cheese.
Now, I heard that Ryan Lochte was on one of the late night shows earlier this week, and they were commenting on that, how similar he was to Lochte. And they said that was all – he wrote that character. Everything was written, all that, before the Olympics even. So then they said they were just as perplexed as everyone else. They were watching the Olympics, and all this is unfolding. And they're like, holy crap. Like, this is like our character. Like, you know, really, like, you know, life imitating art or
yep.
vice versa or whatever. So it's kind of interesting. They didn't plan it that way, but it worked out. So
that's funny.
That just proves how much of a douche Ryan Lochte is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and he plays that up, you know, great. He's great at the cocky, I can do it myself, I don't need anybody, you know, but you know, through the movie he changes, and you know, of course he needs people and becomes a team player, you know, so
okay.
But it's good. I would recommend it if you like. I mean, maybe there's a lot of good movies coming out, so this one's going to go to the wayside real fast. And I mean, it was only like what, third in the box office, I believe.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute.
But
the interesting thing to me is that I know Brian saw this movie, and he was a little more critical of it, kind of butthurt, if you will. So, Brian, what did you have to say about this movie?
Hey, Take Two fans, this is Brian. Sorry I couldn't be with you this evening, but I definitely wanted to get you my Baywatch review because I checked it out this weekend. It was a film that I was very, very much looking forward to, and I was very, very much disappointed. I don't understand why they decided to take the direction that they did with this film. They made a very strong choice, and it's not holding true to what the original TV show was all about. Seth Gordon is your director. I had high hopes because he did films that I enjoyed, like Identity Thief and Horrible Bosses, especially Horrible Bosses. It's got Dwayne Johnson, who I love, Zac Efron, who I actually enjoy as an actor, and I think his career could be something legit. And then a couple of newcomers, Alexandra Daddario from True Detective and Percy Jackson, a couple other things. I was a big Baywatch fan, and the thing about the show is that it played it serious. It was lifeguards that were also fighting crime, and like major crimes, but it never made fun of itself for doing that. It just held true that that's what they do, that's their jobs. And fans made fun of it and snickered behind the scenes that, like, you know, a real-life lifeguard wouldn't do that, maybe. But this film spends the majority of the film just making fun of that and making a slapstick with some raunchy joke comedy every other turn, and it just doesn't hold true to what the old TV show did. And I know this is a movie and they get to take their own direction, and that's fine. I went into it thinking that they were going to go another level, like a deeper, you know, where The Rock actually investigates some of these crimes and they jump on board and there's fight scenes. And with he gets into big fight scenes and scenes where it could be like badass, but instead they're in like a kid's playroom and he shoots, you know, milk out of a bottle into the guy's eyes to try and blind him while they're wrestling. And then the guy, you know, shoots baby powder in his face. And first of all, anyone that has a baby knows that you don't just leave random milk bottles lying around. The baby needs to eat it, or it needs to go in the fridge. Anyway, I didn't enjoy the film for that fact. It was a slapstick comedy that also had a comic relief character that I just didn't find necessary. And it just made fun of itself, making fun of itself. Efron was good. All the acting was actually great. But like Efron was, you know, making fun of Ryan Lochte. He was like this idiot Olympic swimmer, and they just make fun of it to no end. And yes, it is funny, but I went into it with the wrong mindset. I went into it thinking it was just going to be the next level of the Baywatch show. And instead they went a pure comedy slash action, more comedy slapstick route. And so I was just bummed out, pretty disappointed. I will have a much deeper review written up on take2podcast.com. Check out our blog for all of our write-ups, all of our reviews. Send me your thoughts at take2podcast on Twitter, and you know, take2podcast@gmail.com is our email. Send us what you thought about Baywatch and what score you gave it. I, myself, Brian, give it a solid 3 out of 10. This is Brian, Take Two Podcast.
All right, Brian. Yeah, thanks for that. That was great. And great segue into our box office numbers for the week as well. Sadly, Baywatch did come in third. Pirates of the Caribbean was number one for the weekend, making $62.6 million. Guardians of the Galaxy came in at second with $20.6 million. Baywatch was third, $18.6 million. Nick's movie Alien hanging out at number four. Still with done. $10.5 yeah. Everything. With fifth place at $6 million. So interesting weekend, really. And there were a couple records broken and things like that. Craig, what did you say that happened this weekend? It was the lowest.
Yeah, they said it was the lowest Memorial Day weekend box office in the past 20 years.
Okay.
I don't know necessarily why. I don't know if it was the options that were available, or it's not like this weekend was any different than any other Memorial Day weekend. So
yeah, I don't know. It
seemed like there was enough out there.
Interesting things that happened was Beauty and the Beast crossed $500 million domestically, which is only the eighth film to do that ever.
I can't believe that's still playing in some theaters, man.
Yep.
It actually comes out on DVD, I think, next week.
Wow.
I think either this week or next week it comes out on DVD.
Wow, okay. That's fast.
Okay. Yeah, they brought it out super fast, and it's...
See, I never could understand.
It's going to be one of those few movies that actually, like, crosses in between.
What's the determining factor of how long a movie goes from theater to DVD? Because it seems like that's still playing in the theater. You would think it would take a little bit longer before, because, you know, yeah. I'm sure a lot of the cheaper theaters will want to play, you know, they want to squeeze as much as they can out of it at the box office.
Yeah, but this is all for Disney. Disney's going to make more money off of making a DVD and selling it than it is having it still in the theater.
Yeah, they've definitely shortened the window ever since we've had, like, Netflix and stuff come around. And on demand as well, because you always get stuff on demand first, and then DVD. You know, they've almost created like three different release dates now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to keep track, really.
And they probably want to put it out early, because I'm sure to beat any kind of thieves out there putting out fake DVDs. Mm-hmm. You know.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Now, some of the other interesting things from the weekend: Pirates also brought in 208.4. International. It was the 12th largest opening international ever.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it didn't do as well as they expected here, but it's killing it already. So between that and Beauty and the Beast, Disney is already over $1 billion domestically for the year.
Is that even counting Guardians?
Yeah. That counts Guardians,
three,
yeah.
Basically, there's three, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, they still have Cars to come out. They've got Thor. They've got Star Wars. They're going to crush it this year.
Mm. So. That's insane.
Yep. So,
where did your Bahu Dhabi wherever fall, Tony?
What was it called? Bahu Bahi?
Bahu Bahi. I didn't have that one today. I didn't look it up. It fell off the charts last week, so I don't know where it ended up.
That's a shame.
We also had Fast and the Furious crossed $1 billion international. Wow. Which is only six. It's only the sixth film to do that. Do you know what the other five are? I wonder.
Are they the other Fast and the Furious movies?
No. $1 billion international. Can you guess the other five?
Titanic.
First Spider-Man.
No.
Come on.
Okay.
Bo's done.
Pacific Rim?
No, definitely not.
Wow.
The Force Awakens.
Force Awakens is on there. That's one of them. Okay, you're on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you the other ones. It's Avatar, Titanic.
Avatar, that's what I was
thinking. That's what you meant, not Spider-Man. You meant Avatar.
I meant to say Avatar, not Spider-Man.
Yeah, they're very close. Blue guy, red guy, yep. Very close.
Blue guys, a green guy. It's blue guys. Mm-hmm.
All right, so Avatar, Titanic, Furious 7, Star Wars Force Awakens, Jurassic World. Those are the other five. So now you've got two Fast and the Furious films have crossed $1 billion international. That's crazy to me.
That's insane. They're never going to stop making those movies.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
There's no reason they should ever stop.
They're printing money. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, and then that Everything that came in at fifth this week, you know, it made another $6 million this weekend. It only had a $10 million budget, so it's already at 21 and a half. That's pretty good. For
that's just really good,
A, you know, book adaptation, small movie like that. So,
mm-hmm.
I'm a little shocked that, like you said, that it was a low weekend. It seemed like a lot of stuff is out right now that's really doing well. Oh, the other thing, Guardians has now beat the first Guardians movie in money made already.
I did see that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to me. So,
yeah, not too often. That's not true. The sequel, they usually fare pretty well against the first one, don't they?
Yeah, it depends on what it is. I doubt the Zoolander sequel beat the original Zoolander.
Yes, or Dumb and Dumber 2.
Or Dumb and Dumber 2.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they said they credit it to one person who's seen it a few times in the theater individually. Is really
right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So.
Well, you know, I'm still waiting for the Titanic sequel. I want to see how that does against the first one.
So, yeah. Okay. Keep waiting. You got to wait through Avatar 2, 3, 4, and 5 to get that.
Jack's Revenge. Come on.
There will be no Titanic sequel because he's going to lose all of his revenue from this lawsuit that's pending.
True. True.
That's true.
Point, yeah.
That's true.
All right, but going through the box office got us thinking about our bracket. We failed to update that last week.
Right. And unfortunately, the international market with Pirates does nothing.
Yeah, it does not count. We only look at the first three-day weekend. We don't even count the Memorial Day weekend in these numbers. We looked at just specific three-day weekends. And so far, we're about a third of the way through. We've had six movies released that are part of our bracket. Sadly, Bo and Craig have not had any movies released yet. But as of now, Nick is definitely in the commanding lead, as he had Guardians and Alien. And between the two of them, they had over $180 million between the two of them for their opening weekends. So he is in a commanding lead at this point. Roy is in a commanding losing spot.
Commanding losing. Yes. Last place with a bullet.
Yes. Well, he's actually not in last place right now, but he's had two films released, Arthur and Wimpy Kid, and he's only at $22.5 million.
Yeah.
Which barely beats me with Baywatch. I had Baywatch 18.6. So technically I'm in last, but Roy has two movies. So he's not looking – me. Neither of us are really looking that good at this point. So, and then Brian had Pirates of the Caribbean with the 62.6. So Nick's at a commanding lead. Mm-hmm. Brian's maybe still hanging in there, and we'll have to wait a couple more weeks to see what
– Actually, no. Next week is me and Craig.
Next week's Wonder Woman.
And I've got Diary – oh, no, it's –
Diary of Underpants. Yeah, that's an interesting movie.
Yeah, Diary of the Underpants. Captain Underpants.
Is that like that Red Shoes Diary show that you see on?
Yes. Yeah, yes. So next week we will see how you guys do. We'll have to finally add you to the competition.
So I'm thinking Captain Underpants will do real well against Wonder Woman. I'm thinking
That's funny because I don't think that at all. So
I may end up in a theater seeing both of those films next week because my son loves Captain America. Yeah.
Same here. See? I'm in the same boat.
That's a cancel out right there. That's what's going to happen.
Cancel out.
There's going to be some adults who are going to say, okay, you go see this and I'll go see this. And that's, you know, that's a lot of tickets right there, pal.
All right. Now, speaking of the Memorial Day box office, we decided this week to talk about our favorite war movies in honor of Memorial Day. Of course, Memorial Day is a somber holiday. We like to remember those who lost their lives defending our country. But we wanted to look at it from a film lover, you know, aspect and see what our favorite war movies were. So Roy and Brian were not here tonight with us, but they are going to go ahead and record their picks for you. And we're going to play those for you right now.
Hey, Take Two Universe. This is Roy. And with so many war movies available, it was hard to pick just one. I was able to narrow it down to Stanley Kubrick's iconic Full Metal Jacket. If you haven't seen this, you need to check it out. It begins with an unforgettable scene between a drill sergeant and the privates, and how he puts those privates through hell. It also shows the interaction between those soldiers trying to get through a difficult time and how they band together in order to make it happen. And just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Kubrick takes you into the Vietnam War itself, the interactions between these soldiers and the Vietnamese, and how each one of them deals with it is amazing. There are so many unforgettable scenes and memorable movie quotes that it really is impossible to pick just one. If you haven't seen Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket, you need to stop listening right now and go watch it. As always, let us know what you think. Check us out on Twitter at Take Two Podcast. Check our blog out at take2podcast.com and look us up on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you.
No, thank you, Roy. And that is a fantastic film, one of my favorites as well. But my personal favorite war or military style film of all time is Saving Private Ryan. The 1998 film that was nominated for quite a few Oscars. It was a 5-time winner. Not Best Picture, though, because it was snubbed by Shakespeare in Love. But Steven Spielberg was gone for a while. It felt like he hadn't made anything in a few years. And all of a sudden he came out swinging with this very graphic, very detailed war story about a group of soldiers that are given a mission to go find another soldier whose three brothers had all died in battle. And the Army and United States decided to go back and get this one brother out so that all four children did not die out of this family. And there is a lot of controversy and a lot of political emotions that are driven through each one of these characters individually and why they have to go on this journey. Why were they chosen to go on the journey? Who's to say this guy is more popular than they are or more important than they are? And so throughout the film, it's more than just about the battles that they're fighting, but the battles that they're also fighting within themselves. There's also the inner struggle that they have within their group. And Spielberg has one of the most graphic scenes and arguably best war scene of all time. And the opening of this film, The Storm in the Beach of Normandy, it will leave you absolutely speechless when you watch it. And I think it's hard, if that scene is on TV, to turn that scene off. That very much gets you hooked into the film and then you can't stop watching, even though it's just shy of 3 hours long. I do have to say, though, that my favorite scene probably in the entire film, and one of my favorite scenes in all of filmmaking, is the scene when the mother finds out the three boys have been killed. She lives in the Midwest and there's a dirt road leading up to her farmhouse, and she's washing dishes inside the house and looks out and sees a government vehicle coming down the dirt road. She walks to the front door and opens it and leaves the door open. And the shot is from inside the house. And you just see her back the entire time. As she walks out, the Army officials come out and walk up to her. And they've got papers in hand. And not a single word is spoken. And she slowly brings herself down to the porch, sits down. And the Army official just comes and sits right next to her. And you almost imagine that the man doesn't even say words to her at any point, but she knows that one of her children has not made it through this war, and at that point, then she's done. And it just an absolutely emotional, powerful scene without any words being spoken. Okay, Tom Hanks, Matt Damon, Tom Sizemore, Ed Burns, Giovanni Ribisi. There's a humongous cast in this film. I will say, if you've never seen Saving Private Ryan, you must watch this film. Say a prayer for all the troops out there after you say it, because it will get you for sure. It's a lot more than just about the war. It's about earning your spot in life and earning what's given to you and how many people died for us in the past and what we choose to do with it the rest of our lives to honor them with. A perfect film to speak about this Memorial Day. And for me, the perfect war film, Saving Private Ryan. Thanks, everybody. This is Brian with Take Two Podcast.
Yeah, those are both great picks, Brian and Roy. Great picks. Love
both. Good picks. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nick, why don't you go ahead and tell us what your favorite was?
My favorite war movie is Born on the 4th of July. Mainly, I love the Vietnam era films. Had family that fought in the Vietnam War, so kind of. And I think Tom Cruise, I mean, I think he won his first Academy Award from that film.
He was great in that.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a great movie all around. Just loved it. I love, you know, that idealistic young man volunteering to go, you know, just, it's a good story.
Yep. So. Definitely a good movie. Agreed. Well directed, well acted, everything about it's great. A little bit long, maybe, but it's a good movie.
Yeah, it almost overstayed its welcome. That's true. But I think it still ended well. It's good.
Now, Craig, we need you on that line, so tell us about your movie.
Yes, I decided to go for the more military classic, A Few Good Men, just because most people can quote lines from that movie, especially the interrogation line over and over again. It was a toss-up, though. It was hard between that and Top Gun. But I decided to go for the later Tom Cruise classic of A Few Good Men.
Was Top Gun really a war movie? What war was it?
It was a military movie, I guess you would say.
Yeah, I was just thinking of like war, like actual movies about wars. But
about war, and yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean,
they had the need for speed.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's so, and because of that, Bo, you're right. That's why I ended up choosing A Few Good Men. I thought it was a little bit better, you know, a little bit fit Memorial Day a little bit more. But I mean, I just think it's great. It's, and I'll definitely watch it whenever it's on, and mm-hmm. you know.
That's definitely a good one. That's one of my favorites. It's one of those ones that whenever it comes on TV, my wife gets so mad because I always stop and watch it. She's like,
oh, exactly.
You can't ignore Jack Nicholson in that movie.
No.
He's fantastic.
No. He's going to beat you with a pillowcase full of soap if you do.
And Tom Cruise is even amazing in it.
And he's very young. If you watch it now, he's so young.
Oh, he is. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Looks like a baby.
Did you order the Code Red?
Well, that's because he's like 80 now, so you know.
You got Kiefer Sutherland there too, right?
Yeah, it's Cuba Gooding Jr.
Cuba Gooding Jr. Yeah,
Demi Moore. A bunch of people in it.
Yep. Kevin Pollak.
We're just gonna scream out people that were in the movie.
it's a good movie. It definitely is up there as one of the best picks. So
definitely,
mm-hmm. And now, Kevin Bacon, because Kevin Bacon's in everything.
Oh, Kevin Bacon's in everything. Yes.
Now let me segue mine, because mine is a Kevin Bacon movie. And I went with Taking Chance, which is the HBO movie from 2009. I don't know if anybody's seen it but me.
Yes, very good movie, very good.
Did you guys see it, Nick? Bob?
I never saw it.
Did not.
You need to go watch this movie. This, to me, is the epitome of Memorial Day for me.
Oh, yeah.
It's a true story, based on a true story, a Marine lieutenant colonel who works at the Dover base, and they basically receive the remains of military men and women killed in action. And then their job about, you know, delivering the remains and notifying the family and all that. And it really follows that process like nothing I've ever seen before. And it really, without it being a documentary, it's an actual, you know, film. And I thought it was fantastic. It really tugs at your heartstrings a lot. Very emotional movie. You see him, you know, escorting the casket on the plane, and how the level of respect that's given from the crew members on the plane and the people that are sitting on the plane with him. And then as he's traveling to meet the family and meeting people along the way, it is a fantastic movie. Kevin Bacon is great in it. And if you haven't seen this, please seek it out and watch it. It is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely probably put it in his top three, I think.
Yeah. And like I said, I just think it's a very important movie, and I've never seen any other kind of military movie like this. Now, Bo, you went a little old school for me.
I did a little old school. I felt that my movie was The Patriot. That's the Revolutionary War, which to me, I think, is like the war of all wars. That's the war that got us where we are today, America, freedom.
Right. It's the war where you became a man. What? You had to know that joke was coming, Bo.
Of course. I'm waiting to see, you know, if you want me to bring my musket and show you guys. I mean, come on. But
keep your musket to yourself.
Yes, please.
You know you want to see it. It's really one of those movies that it shows a little bit of everything. It shows, like, you know, how much those people sacrifice. I mean, yeah, and all soldiers sacrifice, but it was like one of the few wars that were here on our homeland. So, you know, not only were we being sacrificed, the soldiers, but the homesteads were being destroyed by the British soldiers. So nobody was really safe. So it had a lot of stuff with people losing their families and then having to go to war and coming back and seeing their families gone but still having to fight. I mean, it was just a lot to the movie. It was really good. I think that's probably one of the better war movies.
Yeah, and it has a pre-racist Mel Gibson and an actual live Heath Ledger.
Pre-Joker. So.
And a sober Mel Gibson also.
Right, and then pre-Joker Heath, yeah.
Yep. Actual
I forgot he was actually in that film, yeah.
Now, I did want to give an honorable mention. We had a little Twitter outreach from one of our listeners, Damien. He said Black Hawk Down, which I feel that's a pretty well-made war movie.
That was a really good movie. Yep.
Yeah. Now, are there any other ones that you guys were considering along the way? I know I have a bunch of other ones that I was thinking about.
Yeah, there was Platoon was in my ranking. Same here. Trying to think about that one.
Sure. Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Both of those, you know, I think are strong. I mean, those are just so – those are brutal to watch.
Yeah.
You know, like, you want to talk about a movie that makes you kind of feel like war, but yeah.
And I know me and you had talked about Inglourious Basterds. I love Inglourious Basterds.
Yep.
It barely has war in it, but it kind of counts.
With the alternate history and all, I mean, it's kind of –
We had Dirty Dozen we talked about. Hurt Locker won Best Picture a few years ago.
Yeah,
I didn't really care for that all that much. I don't see. I mean, it was good, but like the whole, I don't know. I didn't get it.
Big Red One
was awesome. One. Yes.
Yeah, I like Patton. Patton's a good one.
Patton was good.
American Sniper, Deer Hunter. I don't know if you guys ever saw Deer Hunter. I did.
Deer Hunter. Yes.
That one. I mean, that's such like a psychological movie. A little bit different than a lot of other war movies.
Oh yeah.
More about the effects when you get home. You know.
What's the Kiefer Sutherland movie, the Pacific Theater in World War II, when they were like in the Philippines and he was a prisoner of war? What was that?
Who was it? Which
one? It was Kiefer Sutherland, and they were prisoners of war. The Japanese had them, and they were like in the Philippines, I think.
I mean, you had the Christian Bale one, which sounds similar, Rescue Dawn, where he was in a POW camp, or Unbroken, another one that was POW, Louis Zamperini. That was a great movie. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Well, you have Donald Sutherland, and he played in MASH. You know, that was a classic that sparked off a fantastic TV show.
Yeah, you watched that in real life. How was that?
I went through the war. So, you know, I lived through everything. It's amazing.
Oh, wow. I know. I lived through everything. I like that.
Lived through all.
So some of the more recent stuff we've covered on our website, take2podcast.com, like Hacksaw Ridge was just out this past year. I don't know if anybody else got a chance to see that, but I thought it was great.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard really good things about it. Yeah,
that one was really good. That's one of those things where Mel Gibson kind of ruins the movie because his involvement kept people away, I think, but it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
And then Brian and I also watched the Five Came Back on Netflix. Did anybody else watch that?
Oh, that's I watched it after you guys talked about it on the show.
Actually, how many episodes? There was 3 episodes, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I saw the first 2. I haven't seen the third one yet.
Great little documentary. You know, I thought really well done, really intriguing. I learned a lot. So then you had the Clint Eastwood Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima. Those were pretty good. I don't know if you guys saw those.
Those were pretty decent.
Glory is a fantastic one.
Yeah.
Tora
is a good one.
You had We Were Soldiers, Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson's all over the place with these war movies.
He's all over the place with those,
To End All Wars was the name of that film. And they were in Burma, not the Philippines. But
okay.
Close. Yeah. I'm close.
Hey, Southeast Asian, you know, it's down
it's
there.
All the same. I know.
Now, probably the one that's going to be polarizing for most of us is Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people didn't like it. I'm okay with it. I remember seeing it in the theater, and it was okay.
I don't know why people hated it so much. I mean, were they just getting tired of Ben Affleck and Matt Damon? I mean,
I don't know if I'd ever go back and watch it again. Like, I don't know if it's ever that compelling to sit down and watch it again, but it wasn't bad.
No.
I don't know. When that movie came out, I was living in South Carolina, and I was actually – God, I was – back in my first year of college, and I was working at Walmart, the warehouse, and this older guy, I can't remember his name, but he was in World War II. He was like in his late 70s then. He was in the Navy, and he sweared up and down like those, like the action scenes when the Japanese were attacking the harbor. He was like, the weapons, the sounds, the artillery, like that's exactly how it was done. He's like, it was like being there. So I'm like, okay. He lived it, so.
Yeah, that's impressive. I mean, if you worked with Nick in Walmart 15 years ago,
he's probably dead.
and he might still be alive.
You could be one of our one of 3 famous people we've had to interview on here.
Yeah. Email us, take2podcast@gmail.com. We'll set up an interview with you if you're still alive.
Kind of remember his name.
A Walmart worker.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anybody else have any other ones that they could think of that they were debating on, or any other good ones, favorites?
No, I think once I picked the Patriot, I think I pretty much was my pick. So,
yeah, they're all good choices. So I just figured it was worth discussing, I mean, war movies. It's own genre, really. I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot out there, and they're all good, and it's always worth looking at and honoring the troops in that way, if that's the way you want to do it. You know, is enjoying the film version of these real life, you know, actions. So, thank you for your service, and for those who gave all, we're looking at you on Memorial Day. We're thinking about you. So.
Yep.
All right, but moving ahead to our news of the night, Nick, what do you have for us?
Well, I'm gonna kick it off with everyone's favorite actor, Charlie Sheen. He is, I guess, I don't know if he's doing this financially on his own or he's pitching it to the studios, but a Major League Two or Major not Two? Is it Major League Two? They only made.
That would be.
Major League Two. Yeah, he would be doing three, right?
Well, didn't they do a three too?
They did, but I think he wants to make a sequel to part two.
Like that. But like he has, apparently he's got Wesley Snipes on board, or Tom Berengin, and Corbin
Bergeron.
Bergeron, thank you.
No, right. Bergeron does Berengeron. Dance with the Stars.
Oh, yeah. Damn it. Berenger?
Berenger.
And
close enough.
Corbin Bernson. So, I mean, I guess... The article I was reading did not have any studios or anything like that, but apparently there's some traction. So maybe a year or two, we'll see it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting because what are they going to do? Because they can't be the ball players anymore. They're too old.
Yeah, I mean, managers.
So are they just going to be, they're just going to be managers or in the office, and then it's going to be a new team? Because they kind of already did that with the third major league.
The third one, right?
Yeah. That was back to the minors. So it was all different casts. I mean... If they can do it, but I think it's just Charlie Sheen trying to stay relevant, which he's not.
He hasn't done anything in years. I mean,
because he tried last year to grab onto the Indians when they were in the World Series, and there was a whole big thing like, oh, let Charlie Sheen come throw out the first pitch. It's like, who cares about Charlie? He's not from Cleveland. He was in one stupid comedy about the Indians.
About the Indians, and that was it.
Yeah. So, whatever.
All right. My next bit of news, Star Wars. So everyone was asking, like, what is the next project after the Han Solo film in episode 9? Well, apparently we will know next month. Disney Lucasfilms will say everything's in talks. They're ironing out the details for moving forward their next project. So I guess we're going to see what happens after. Well, we're going to see what happens after the Skywalker saga is done. Don't know if, you know, Rey and Finn and all of them are going to be the next stars for another trilogy, or they're going to be, who knows. But I'm curious to see which path they're going to take here.
Okay. I
mean, and
we'll hear about that Jar Jar Binks origin film.
Oh, God.
I'm just hoping for the Lando Calrissian movie. That's all I want.
You know, for some reason, I guess this article was not really, I guess those standalone films are just, they're going to keep coming. But like, there, I guess this article is about like the next.
The actual next trilogy,
saga, or whatever.
Yeah, next
they're
saga.
Do.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
All right, and in changing gears a little bit, I got some video game news. I guess it's good and bad news. I guess first off, the good news for the digital video game sellers downloads. March, the numbers were $8 billion. In April, there were $7.7 billion. So still going strong. Which therein lies the bad news for GameStop, and I guess GameStop is the only one last video game brick and mortar store still standing, I think.
Yeah, so. I mean, you're losing a lot of business with your Walmarts, your Targets, your Amazon. Yeah, you know, everybody can just get everything there, so what's the point?
Well, yeah, why are you going to go to a separate store most of the time?
It's like a comic book store. I do like going to GameStop. I mean, because I guess they bought out like the one geek. What was that?
Think Geek.
I mean, they have like some, you know, just little odds and ends and, you know, whatever. But it's kind of cool to go in and take a look. But you're right. I mean, I can get used games from there.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's about it. That's their big thing, is their used stuff. Yeah. Otherwise, it's an Amazon show place. You go look at stuff and then you're like, let me see how much it is on Amazon.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's $10 cheaper and it'll be here tomorrow. Like.
Yep.
So, and I guess on the video game news track, Tekken 7 is coming out this Friday, which is a huge release, and I plan to pick it up. So I will write about that on the blog on take2podcast.com for anyone who's interested in a little Tekken action, and I'll give you my screen name. I might come up with a different screen name just for Tekken 7. So.
Oh, okay, wow.
You know.
Now, I've been meaning to ask you, and I'm going to do it on air, put you on spot. Are you playing Injustice 2?
I actually skipped Injustice for Tekken 7. I don't need two fighting games, and just like, it was a hard choice, but like, Tekken is just, I go back to, you know, being in high school at an arcade, just playing Tekken.
Okay, because to me, Injustice looks good.
It does look good.
I wanted to buy a new system just to play it, because they don't make it for Wii U. That's all we have here in my house.
Anyway, they don't make it for Nintendo DS either, so it's
no. Yep. But
I do have the Injustice app on my phone, and it is fun on the... I mean, it's so much fun on the phones. I can imagine on the console, it's probably awesome.
There we go. Okay, yeah, so, I knew I was going to get it out of you some way.
Yeah, I've got the app too. I haven't really started playing it yet, but whenever I get a chance, I'm going to jump on it.
Yeah, but $120 in 2 weeks for games, I think the wife might put me in a sleeper hold, so I'm just not going to. Not going to go that
way. So you heard it here first, folks. Go ahead and buy some more Take-Two t-shirts so Nick can buy games.
Please.
So we can give you more reviews.
Yes. He needs to talk about video games. You need to buy the shirt so he can talk about the video games.
All right.
Is that all your news, Nick?
That's all I got, sir.
All right, Bo, what did you have for us?
I really don't have a lot. I was just looking at some of the Spider-Man. I think Sony's trying to take advantage of the new Spider-Man coming out. They're supposedly putting out a re-release, an alternate cut of Spider-Man 3. But they said... people have seen it or know about it, say there's really nothing new to it. There might be some new dialogue, but there's nothing major. Yeah.
Let me piggyback on that. I saw an article earlier today. It said it's already been taken off Amazon.
Oh, wow.
I believe it.
Because, and I think that's why, because they said it was like an editor's cut, right?
Yeah, they said it was a alternate. They said made it sound like it was an alternate cut, like there was going to be a different ending.
They said it was the editor's cut, and it was really not much different. And it was only available on Amazon for like a day.
Yeah, and they said it was like, very little, if any. Matter of fact, they said the movie was shorter. The cut version was shorter than the original that was put out in the theater. So they were like, how are you going to put out something that's not even at least 20, 30 minutes longer than the original?
Oh, well, that actually sounds better to me. If you could cut out emo Spider-Man. And
Whenever I watch that movie, like on DVD, I always, you know how you can fast forward like sections,
You skip that. Yeah, you skip that. You have to.
Dude, I could watch that movie in like 30 minutes and see all the emo.
Sure, you could.
I could skip all the emo.
You don't want to see Spider-Man walking down the street dancing in the rain with his black suit.
As good as it was the first time I saw it,
I know you're lying now.
Being all tough and looking at the girl saying, "Give me some milk." You know, that was high. I mean, it was good. But I've had my share, and I'll just fast forward through the bad parts.
So I'm assuming
we need a Bose cut.
I'd
like to venture to say you could watch Spider-Man 3 and then Amazing Spider-Man 2 in under an hour. You could probably watch both of those and just skip all to the good parts, and that's it.
You know, I didn't hate Spider-Man 2 or Amazing Spider-Man as much as a lot of people did. I liked it.
Part 2?
I mean, yeah.
I couldn't even get through it in one sitting.
Really? Part 2 was the one with Jamie Foxx, right?
It was awful.
It was pretty bad. It was pretty terrible.
It was bad. I'm not saying it went, but I liked it. The music part was kind of silly. You know, the whole, spider up the wall, whatever. It was stupid. But the fight scenes were great. I mean, I love how they slow it down so you can see.
Do that part again for me.
The music part?
I can't remember what it was now.
I don't remember that on the film, but
hey. Nope, me neither.
No, but, me either. Not remember at all. That part? Nope.
He was playing. It was like the all the lights were making the sounds, and he was singing "Itsy Bitsy Spider."
No.
Oh my god!
We obviously all blocked out most of it.
I fell asleep. I fell asleep.
Yeah. No, it was the scene where he was, going through the electric. They were fighting in the electric.
Now, who is he? You're saying he? Who are you talking about?
Spider-Man? The only one that was electric.
Oh, Jamie Foxx?
Yeah.
Oh. But he boogie, was, boogie, boogie, boogie.
I was thinking
but
that.
Yeah, they were fighting, but he kept playing Itsy Bitsy Spider through the electrodes or whatever. It's like, dun, yep. Dun, 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 dun. That's where I got that low. Dun, 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 so.
Terrible.
Yeah, it was not a great movie, but I didn't hate it. I thought the fight scenes were, I enjoy the fight scenes. I'm all about the fight scenes.
Okay. Well, like I said, you could probably watch both of those in an hour.
Yeah, you're probably right.
We should make a cut of that and sell that.
Oh, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Probably sell more than that of t-shirts.
Yep. All right. Any other news, Bo?
Let's see. I think it said Homecoming's dropped its or came out with the songs that are on the soundtrack, but I don't know any of them, so I'm not really going to go over what they were. Cause
no Nickelback?
Actually, I like Nickelback. Stop playing Nickelback.
Or what was it? Evanescence? Weren't they in the first soundtrack?
Yes.
No. Was Evanescence or were they in Daredevil?
I don't even remember.
I just definitely remember the Nickelback one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was good. Nickelback. Well, it was Nickelback and what was the other guy? It was like a collaboration between the two.
Oh, yeah. Like some other.
It wasn't actually Nickelback. It was just the lead singer. So it was like the collaboration of the two.
Still sucks. Okay.
Now, the first CD was good for the first Spider-Man. You didn't like it?
I'll take your word for it.
I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Yeah. Aerosmith singing the Spider-Man theme song from the TV show. It's good. Okay. Check it out.
Okay.
Buy it. Enjoy it. Listen.
Anything else for us?
Yeah. Do it.
Now.
Anything non-Spider-Man related?
Do it, baby. No, that's it. I mean, y'all covered all the other stuff.
Okay.
It's beautiful.
Greg, got anything for us?
Let's see. Well, in superhero news, a fight that we never thought was going to happen seems to be happening, because I just got some news about it, that the Incredible Hulk and Flash Gordon fought today at the London Comic Con when Lou Ferrigno got in a fight with James J. Jones, who played Flash Gordon in the 1980 movie, and they got in a screaming match at each other. They were pointing fingers and shoving each other.
This wasn't staged.
I hope there's video.
This was not staged. This actually happened at a Comic-Con where they were both signing. I've been looking. I haven't seen video yet, but they're apparently a fan had to get in between them and told them to act like adults.
Are you getting between them. Lou Ferrigno and anybody?
Lou Ferrigno and Flash Gordon.
No, I'm not getting between Lou Ferrigno and anybody.
I agree.
He's old, but he's still a big dude. Yeah.
He's still a big dude.
Although I like the Flash Gordon song. I like the Flash Gordon song.
Yeah.
Flash. Ah, it's a miracle. Yeah.
So that happened at London Comic Con today.
Okay.
We can only hope that Awesome Con will be just as exciting.
I know.
Yeah.
Now, that's the same actor that played in the Ted movies. Wouldn't he?
Were they fans of the movie?
Yeah,
they were fans of the movie. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
fun.
Let's see.
The most excitement at our con is going to be if Stan Lee's still alive.
Right. Which it looks like
you're on a roll tonight, Tony.
Yeah.
It looks like we're pushing it.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
In Wonder Woman news, Patty Jenkins, the director of Wonder Woman, in a couple of interviews and stuff, has been referring to it as Wonder Woman 1. So people are speculating if that's leading to that this is possibility of sequels in the future or, you know, something like that coming else from it. She hasn't confirmed that, but she's actually been saying Wonder Woman 1 a few times. And then in relation to that, and we can discuss this, the Alamo Draft House came out announcing that they were going to do the women-only screening of Wonder Woman throughout a couple of different Alamo Draft House throughout the country.
Yeah.
There was a huge backlash from it. Everybody was upset about it. So the Alamo Draft House came back and said, "We've heard your complaints. We understand. We are now offering more women-only showings at all of our theaters."
Love the Alamo.
We did a Twitter poll at Take Two Podcast on Twitter, and it was kind of like a mixed bag result on that, right?
Yeah. That's what I was trying to remember the actual numbers, but it was because the choices were like, you know, yay, go, like, women only, you know, it doesn't really matter to us. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to see Wonder Woman in the first place. Or
it's going
to
be more guys seeing Wonder Woman and women this weekend. Just, I don't get what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, this movie is going to be huge. And, you know, I think, and any sort of news involving it like this, I think, is just more news for the movie. So, you know, and the fact that I love the when companies like Alamo Draft House is doing, where, you know, people are upset and trolling them about this, and they decide to basically just troll back and say, you know, we understand, so we're just going to have more women-only showings.
Yeah, Alamo doesn't play. They even have the policy, like, don't be on your phone, don't have your phone out. If you're on your phone, we're going to throw you out. There's no warning. There's nothing. Just come out and just say,
And you can narc people out there, too. We're you have a little piece of paper, and you can write down, like, you know, these people are talking too much or whatever, and they will kick those people out.
Yep.
Like, see, now, our Twitter poll results said yay girl power was 37% of the vote, but then we had about 20% each for cool, have fun, whatever, or seriously so wrong, which it seems like people don't really care either way, which I'm kind of – I think it's cool. If you want to set up a women-only screening and that's going to get women to the theater to watch comic book movies that usually wouldn't go –
oh, yeah, exactly.
Then that's awesome. Good for them. You know, that's maybe smart on their part.
I mean, my wife admitted to me that, you know, she was like, she wants to go see Wonder Woman. And she was like, this is the first time I've wanted to go see any of those stupid movies that you make me go see.
Sure.
Most of the time it's just like, whatever, I'll see it with them. That's fine. But this is the first time she's like, no, I want to go see this. Like,
I think it might be smart on their part as a business move.
Yeah, why not? I agree.
I know some people get backlash, whatever, but it might work out for them. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else we got? Did anybody watch Black Sails, the Starz TV show?
I watched the first season.
Because that show's over now. But the creators and executive producers of that show are making a Cleopatra show for Amazon. That's supposed to be coming out. They're working on it now, so they're shooting for 2019. Supposed to be coming out. They're referring to it as The Godfather in Ancient Egypt.
Okay.
Supposed to be coming to Amazon. Not sure. I mean, the show was, you know, pretty critically acclaimed. So I only watched a couple of the episodes. Never just got into it. But
I got to binge watch it. It was very slow the first couple episodes.
That's what I heard. Yeah. But then they said it picked up pretty quickly. Yeah. So once you got into like 4, 5, 6 episodes.
Yeah. It just like it took a extremely long break from season one to season two, and I just kind of forgot about it, and just never got back into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Starz does that with a lot of their shows.
Yeah. But I'll check out.
And then let's see. Last piece of news I got. Ellen DeGeneres signed up for a new stand-up special with Netflix. Last one she did was in 2000 in HBO.
Wow.
So she signed up to do a new special. It's supposed to be coming out later this year on Netflix. She said she'll announce when it's being taped and stuff on her show so people can get tickets to go. But, I mean, I remember when she was a stand-up comedian. I always thought she was pretty funny, but it's just interesting after, you know, what, 17 years now, we're doing it again. Like, hopefully she's still funny. I don't know. I don't watch her show, so.
I mean, she's probably spent the last 17 years having someone else write a lot of her material. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Is it just going to be, like, an hour of her dancing around the crowd?
We can only hope. I assume there's going to be some massive dance number to end it and start it. Like,
hopefully we get some like Finding Dory type story or something in there that would be comical. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I mean, I'm sure it'll be interesting. I'm sure it'll be very popular.
Yeah.
But what you got for us, Tony? That's all the news I got.
Well, we had yet another loss this week. Sir Roger Moore has died at the ripe age of 89. He's the guy who played Bond the most, actually, 7 films. It's a sad loss for me. I liked some of the Roger Moore stuff. He was older. He was a little cheesy, but I like some of his movies. Live and Let Die to me is fantastic. Yeah. So he'll be missed. I don't know. Do you guys have any favorite Roger Moore movies?
Spy Who Loved Me was good. And then he was the original Saint, which is the only reason I actually remember him that well.
Yeah, that's right.
My dad used to watch that show in reruns like all the time.
I mean, honestly, I liked all of his Bond films that I've seen. Just kind of, I like James Bond.
You love Moonraker, right?
That's right.
Moonraker was so bad it was good. So,
and wasn't he in your movie too, Tony? Cannonball Run.
Oh yeah, he had a little cameo bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. He did more of that as he went on. Wasn't he just in the Melissa McCarthy movie like 2 years ago?
I think spy movie. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's one of those guys that was always Bond. Like Sean Connery went on and had a good career doing other stuff. Even Pierce Brosnan's done some other stuff, you know, whatever. But he was always just James Bond. No matter what he was in, he was Bond. So he kind of is the guy that everybody – I mean, I know Sean Connery a lot of people think of as Bond, but I don't know. He was always Bond to me, and I enjoyed Live and Let Die a lot and his version of it. So he will be missed.
Yep.
Otherwise, we had another kind of disturbing news story this week where you had a man arrested at the Phoenix Comic Con, strapped full of guns and body armor, and it ended up being a plot to actually do quite some damage at this Comic-Con. He was possibly going to go after the Green Power Ranger, Jason David Frank, which to me is just a really weird story, and I guess we're lucky that it didn't turn into anything more than it was. You know, the police were able to apprehend him.
And wasn't Scott calling himself the Punisher also?
Well, he was dressed as a Punisher. Yeah, dressed as a Punisher, had all these guns and stuff on him with real ammo, body armor, everything.
How'd they catch him?
Apparently, he was texting with a like cosplayer who was at the Comic-Con who knew him, and basically telling him like, "I'm coming to do this." And he mentioned specific names, and Jason David Frank specifically, and she tipped the cops off, and they were able to apprehend him. So
good for her.
Yeah,
like who? What issue could he have with the Green Power Ranger?
Exactly.
Like, what has that guy done in recent times that has caused anyone to be this upset with him?
Nothing.
Nothing, right?
Well, I have heard that he is kind of a douche in person, so maybe they had a run-in. Well, I don't know.
That works.
So, you know, so he blew you off at a signing last year, so you're like, well, I'm obviously going to dress like the Punisher and take out 30 people because of him.
Obviously, he's not wound that tight to begin with. It could have just been that simple.
Yeah, but I saw the did you guys see the press release that came out after that, like for the Comic-Con, that was basically like, you know, no fake weapons. Like, you know, they had to go like suit, which I don't blame them. I mean, you're going super strict now, and I'm assuming a lot of cons now, you know, for the near future will probably be doing the same thing, like especially when it comes to guns and, you know, any sort of replica guns, anything like that, like.
Yeah, and this was just a couple days after Manchester, so people were on edge. So, yeah, it's definitely scary, and hopefully nothing like this happens in the future at the next couple that we're planning on going to.
Exactly.
No one come to D.C. or Baltimore with any guns or anything. So.
No, we're just worried about Stan Lee. We don't need to worry about the rest of us.
Yeah, he might not make it. Okay, but other than that, we talked a little bit before about the extended Sony Spider-Man universe they're trying to do. You know, they cast Venom, and they're trying to do these movies without Spider-Man in them, and make movies in that universe but without Spider-Man, which I think is weird. So Venom is going to be on there, and then they announced the Black Cat Silver Sable movie, which now they've changed the title to just Silver and Black.
Well, you know, the funny thing is
I like the way you said that, by the way.
Silver and Black.
Oh, edgy like.
The whole Venom thing, there's so many characters just in the Venom storylines alone. I mean, Spider-Man's in there, but there's so many other versions of spiders that could be in there. You know, they have
they're not going to have Spider-Man in the Venom movie, though. They said that.
And they could do that and still be a popular movie.
I think this is going to be similar to Suicide Squad, where when they were first announcing it, they said, you know, it's just going to be the villains. Batman's not going to be in it. And then, you know, as it gets closer and starts to come out, well, he's got some scenes in it, you know, which I think is the same thing they're going to do. Yeah, it's not going to be starring Spider-Man, you know, but you cannot tell me that they're going to make a Venom movie and then not at least have a Spider-Man, you know, cameo in a flashback or whatever.
Like, and I think in the first one, you would have to actually have Spider-Man because that's how Venom pretty much got started.
Exactly.
I mean, the third Spider-Man kind of told the story a little bit, but they would have to I'm sure they'd want to retell it, you know, put a little more behind the story, like where it came from and everything, and actually have a better I still like the fact who they got for to play Venom. I mean, that's fantastic. So I think with the way they do it with Venom, and I think they could do it without Spider-Man. I mean, maybe the first one have a little bit for the story, for the background, but other than that, you know, because Venom kind of looks at himself as he thinks he's a hero, but he's really kind of one of those guys that he kills. He's like, he's kind of like
the Punisher.
The Punisher, you know, Punisher just goes and he kills. He's jury. He's executioner, and that's the way Venom is. But he looks at himself as a hero.
But in the Venom series, didn't it take a while for him to, I guess, get reformed, quote unquote? Because the symbiote like drove him nuts for a while. So I mean, like, I don't know how they're gonna do this without having Spider-Man to be that one to
I guess, you talk about driving Spider-Man nuts?
No, like it drove Eddie Brock nuts also.
He kind of learned, I guess, I don't know how long it took him, but he actually grown to like having the symbiote on him.
We're not going to have the hunchback scene in the bell tower again.
maybe not. But I think because like I said, Brock learns to like having the Venom suit, and it comes to the point where he needs it. And in the comics, and I don't know if they'll go this far in the theater. In the comics, Brock actually gets cancer, and the suit doesn't like him anymore because he's weak. You know, he's got cancer. He's dying, so he leaves him. And you know, Brock's is like almost like he's lost his best friend. He's like, he's dead now. So
I think they did announce that one. They're going to call it 50-50 Part 2, and Seth Rogen is just going to hang out with Venom.
Love it.
Hold on.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah. But they also announced the director of that movie is Gina Prince Bythewood, who. I don't know her, but apparently she directed the Cloak and Dagger pilot, which will be coming out later this year. So
we'll see.
The other big thing about it was that they said, like I said, they're not going to have Spider-Man in it, but they're talking about all these other characters, a la like a Suicide Squad. And they want to have like Kraven the Hunter and a couple other big name fan favorite villains in it. So, well, I mean, this has potential. It could be cool, but I'm just interested in their decision to pursue these movies without Spider-Man.
They were supposed to do that after with the Amazing Spider-Man. They were going to start doing the whole Sinister Six, mm-hmm. you know, where all those bad guys are going to make a movie of their own. But it all got scrapped when they got rid of the second Spider-Man.
When they made a terrible movie, yeah. As it
right, that's bad.
It pretty much, yeah.
You make bad movies and nobody wants more.
But that would have been good, though. I would have liked to have seen a good, you know, with all six bad guys. That would have been cool.
All right. Well, that's it for my news. Going forward this weekend, you guys already touched on it. We got Wonder Woman is the big release and Captain Underpants. So, yeah, Captain Underpants gets his first
Captain movie. Underpants.
Yep.
Tra-la-la.
So hopefully next week some of our hosts will see either or both of those, and we will have reviews for those. Also, maybe we'll finally catch up with everyone else and see Pirates of the Caribbean, since we slacked on that this week. And then also, just going forward for our show, we're probably going to have another iZombie episode up, guys. Is that true?
Yeah.
That is the plan.
That is the plan, yes. Okay,
that's the plans. We're going to keep following that. We got Leftovers we're following episodically. We also, if you want to stay tuned at the end of our episode here, we've got our interview coming up with Amy Hargreaves, and we're going to keep bringing you guys more stuff like that going forward. Anything else on the docket I missed?
Hopefully to binge watch the hell out of House of Cards and have a review for that next week.
Yeah, that drops tomorrow, right?
Yep.
Yeah, busy day tomorrow.
Busy day. So. Yeah, and I'm about halfway through Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, so I'll probably do a review about that if anybody else cares.
Oh, yeah, me too. I'm halfway through. I'm in, like, episode 7.
Yeah, and eventually, we keep promising it, eventually,
American
I swear
Gods,
to you,
American
me
Gods.
And Mary,
yeah.
we'll record an American Gods
one. Yeah.
It'll happen.
Yeah, we totally got to do that.
Totally going to do that, because that show is insane, and every time I finish an episode, I'm like, why am I not talking to Tony about this right now?
Yeah, I haven't watched the newest one yet, so don't spoil me. But I'm 4 episodes in. What, 5 was the last night, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so, I missed the last 2
but myself. But it's great. It's a great show. So if the listeners aren't watching it yet, please do go check that out.
Which episode was it at where the end where he's playing checkers? Was that 3?
3, yeah, I think. Yes. Okay. Yeah, with Peter Stormare, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Chernobog.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I'm that's where I'm at now. I watched 3.
Yeah, we promise you at the very least we will definitely catch up and review the whole season when it's over.
Yeah, I don't even know how many episodes they're doing.
I think it's only supposed to be 8 is what I read.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so short.
At this point we might as well just wait till the end.
Yeah, but it's a great show and we hope to bring you something on that. We're enjoying it. Anything else anybody's watching right now or looking forward to coming out? I know that like Nick said, House of Cards is dropping.
I need to do a review of Into the Badlands, which ended last week. I got to finish watching the last 2. Honestly, I don't think we've ever really touched on that, so maybe I'll do a recap on the blog for seasons 1 and 2.
Okay, and we're also going to do our big CW wrap-up. We haven't recorded that yet, but we will be. All the DC-oriented shows on CW wrapped up. So we're going to do a special episode looking back at the season of Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, and Legends. And we're going to talk about them all and how well they were and how bad they were and just a little bit of everything and what we think they're going to do for their next season and what possibly we think they could improve on. So look for that episode dropping later this week as well. All right, guys, thanks for listening. As always, check us out at take2podcast.com. Email us at take2podcast@gmail.com. Go on our Facebook and our Twitter. We always have different stuff on there. Take Two Podcast on Facebook and at Take Two Podcast on Twitter. And as always, thanks for listening.
All right.
See you guys.
Peace out. All right. Good night.
Hey, this is Brian. I've got Craig and Bo from Take Two Podcast, and we are very fortunate this evening to be joined by our special guest, Miss Amy Hargraves. She is from 13 Reasons Why and also of Homeland fame, and we are fortunate to have her on the show this evening. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
Good. How am I going to tell you apart, Brian, Bo, and Craig?
This is Brian.
This is Bo. Is
okay.
And this is Craig.
Great, perfect.
It'll be easy.
Simple now, obviously. Of course you will.
It'll be easy because I'm the good-looking one, so that way you'll be able to.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah, right, yeah.
With a face for radio and all that.
Exactly.
Oh well, first off, thank you so much for joining us on Take Two Podcast. We are very excited to have you on, and we appreciate you sharing your time with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Glad you could make time.
The three of us were big fans of 13 Reasons Why, the Netflix show that came out recently. We enjoyed it very much. So all three of us are older and have children, and one of us has actual high school and above age children. We won't mention which one, Bo. But
mine are out of high school, mine are in college, and all this other good stuff. So.
I have high school kids. There's nothing to be ashamed of.
There
nothing
you go. At all. One part of it that definitely struck us, though, as parents was your character. And your character versus the other parents that were in the show. And we very much so enjoyed seeing the eyes of the show through your character and how you handled parenting versus maybe the character of Hannah's parents handled parenting and the subtle differences between them. And then other characters whose parents were even absent and the direct reflection on the children and how they were affected.
Sure, absolutely. I'm glad you picked up on that stuff because, it really... Obviously, the centerpiece of the show is the story of Hannah and Clay and all these other kids, but I think it's interesting to look at how the parents, the different parents throughout the whole show kind of affect their kids.
Right, exactly. I mean, because, from somebody like our lovely character, as much as we hate him, Bryce, whose parents were...
Bryce.
I know.
Yeah, I think they were in, like, Ibiza the whole season, I think, something like that.
I don't know who's... Kid was lucky enough to have parents do that all the time. I mean, the fact that, you actually got involved in Clay's life and cared about what he was doing and checked on him all the time, like, I think that made a huge difference.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I guess so. I think there's a fine line there, too, because, when I initially got the script and the character description of Lainey Jensen, it was that she was literally a helicopter parent and maybe a little too all over the place with him or all over it with him. But I think that is a real thing that exists right now. It's a kind of a parenting trend to be kind of over-involved with your kid's life. I think in this instance, it's a good thing because there's so many awful things going on, obviously, with Hannah Baker's death and Jeff's death, which was also Clay's friend. I think you need to be, I think Lainey's instinct to be super involved in his life and maybe awkwardly trying to be, connected with him. I think it comes from a good place, and in the end, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it was also interesting because she doesn't really know his involvement in Hannah's death, and so she's having to deal with not really knowing what's going on because he doesn't talk to his parents.
Exactly, but she could see, obviously, over the course of the season, which really only, I forget the exact timeline, it's only around 2 or 3 weeks long, the entire course of the first season, she sees, obviously, her son, who she knows very well, starting to kind of behave very much out of character. So, she's kind of putting the pieces together as his behavior starts to devolve, from just coming home with having the bike accident is one thing, but then coming home drunk and the bag of pot in his bag at school, all of these things are just completely out of character for Clay, so I know that that's kind of one of the reasons why Lainey just kind of up, I mean, there's an uptick in her kind of helicoptering.
Helicopterness.
Yes.
Exactly. So have you had, because I know we talked about it when we were talking about the show, we've had a few schools in our area, in the D.C. area where we are, sent out letters about the show, and like some schools, you know, we think are taking the right stance of like, hey, make sure you watch it with your kid. Like, it's not something that the show should be watching alone. But we've had other schools in the area that just, you know, are basically saying don't let your kid watch it, which I don't know how you're feeling.
Isn't that a shame? I think it's such a shame. Yeah, I think it's a shame because, first of all, let's just talk about it honestly. Most of the kids have seen it already. You know, as parents, we're kind of slow on the uptake, and even if we don't think our kids have seen it, they've probably seen it, or they're talking about it. So the subject is already on the table, so to make it some forbidden thing is really just, you know, once again, looking away from these awful and difficult issues that, you know, mental health and suicide, there's so much stigma surrounding it. And for you know, many, many reasons. I mean, one, I was raised Catholic, and just, you know, for a simple example, in the Catholic Church, suicide is a sin. So it's something that just doesn't get talked about. If a poor young person happens to commit suicide, we talk around it. We don't talk right to it. So I think it's a real shame that certain school districts are saying don't watch it, because it's kind of continuing that stigma, or that of putting mental health and suicide to the side and not speaking about it honestly. Because if we can talk about it honestly, then we can give these young people who might be suffering tools to, you know, open their mouth and speak to an adult or speak to a friend or speak to a teacher and say, I don't feel so great. This is what I'm thinking about. What can I do? Can you help me?
That's brilliant. And I think we agreed, and when we did our special show, we all agreed at the same point. Anyone that has asked us if watching it is a good thing or if it's a good show to watch, we all said yes. Mm-hmm. If it starts the conversation, then yes, it's good. It needs to be used to start the conversation, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you guys feel that way. And, you know, let's not even forget about all the other myriad of issues that get brought up, and that, you know, the suicide and mental health angle is getting so much attention. But there's so many other fascinating things that go on in this show that we need to talk about. LGBTQ issues, sexual violence, drinking, drug use, drinking and driving, absentee parents, all these, and that's, you know, that's the tip of the iceberg. There's so many fascinating things that can be discussed with our kids. So I feel like it's a real opportunity that we need to take advantage of. There, I will say though, in terms of the controversy, which is kind of a big word and a big thing, the one part that I can get on board with is that this is not a show for the younger kids. This needs to be for, you know, teenagers, legit teenagers, and not. I don't think it's a spot for 10, 11, 12-year-olds, that kind of thing. It needs to be for older teenagers.
Agreed.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I know some people have put those warnings out, and I do agree with those.
My daughter's 3. We're not watching it together.
Not yet. Yeah, probably not.
Not yet. I mean, I've already decided I'm chaining her in the basement and never leaving the house, but, you know.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You know, and another
that's
thing.
That's awful.
Another thing they touched on in the show was, number one, bullying, and number two, how social media has made it easier for bullies, or, you know, just to, you know, how they were texting and everybody was getting the text about what they were saying about her. So it's a lot of things.
Yeah, one questionable picture can get zapped out to the entire school, and your life is wrecked, basically. And I had a friend here 3 months ago, a mom friend of mine who lives in Connecticut, and her daughter had this actual thing happen to her. The poor girl was quite 10 or 11 and took some silly video on her phone and by accident kind of uploaded it. And it wasn't awful, but it was very embarrassing for this kid. And she uploaded it, and it went to the whole school by accident. She thought she had deleted it. Just a ridiculous thing that, you know, in 5 minutes, her life really changed. And she went to school the next day, and she became that girl, which is kind of, you know, the beginning of Hannah Baker's story, really. And, you know, and it's rough. It's a lot to manage, all of this stuff, the technology and the social media for kids. So, and we're slow on the uptake as parents. I have no idea. Like, my kids are the ones who, they're my social media managers, basically. I'm like, what should I post? How should I do this? They're telling me everything. We don't know.
Yeah.
We're old.
And I think we came out of it thinking like, wait, that's high school now? Like, that's how high school is now? That's super scary.
Yep.
how did this project come your way? Did you read the book ahead of time?
I hadn't read the book, no, but I had heard about the book. And I just got a call. I know they had been casting for a while, and it was, I think it was a lot for them to cast the kids. They're such a huge young cast. So I know they were spending a lot of time with that. And then they kind of came quite late to me and asked me to put myself on tape in New York. I live in New York. I said, can you put yourself on tape for this? And it was, you know, a couple pages. I said, okay, did it real quick, sent it off. And then they were interested. And, you know, one thing led to another and I got the offer. So very here we cool. are. And then I, you know, packed up and went to California for 5 months, basically.
Oh, very cool. Now, as we were doing our specialty show about it, my daughter, who's nine, was looking at some of the promo stuff that we were pictures putting together and very bluntly asked, what is that? And she was referencing the tape player. You, as an adult on that, did you have to teach any of the kids what exactly a tape player was in the first place?
Oh, how to use the tape, the cassette player?
Exactly.
No, I mean, but thank gosh, there's a prop department for exactly those reasons. I stay, as an actor, I stand where they tell me and I say my line. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's fun. It's fun to play with the, you know, that older, the older stuff. Sure. My own daughter just yesterday asked me, and this is even, I mean, she's 14. She said something about a CD, and I said, well, don't you mean a DVD? And she's like, what's the difference?
Oh.
So, like, she didn't know what the difference between a CD and a DVD was, and she's 14. So, you know, cassette player is like, you know, it's like parchment and scrolls. It's like Dead Sea Scrolls for them.
It's putting it on stone with chisels.
Yes.
So, speaking of other actors and such, we have a tradition on our show, if you'll endure us, and we've asked it of every guest that we've ever had on.
Do you want? Are you going to ask me gossip about other actors?
No, no. This is completely your opinion, and you cannot be wrong.
Okay, I don't know, but I can tell you.
Well, no, but we now do have more questions to ask you if you might have any gossip.
Oh no! I've opened a can of worms. Everybody's lovely and professional and amazing, and I've loved everyone I've worked with.
Oh, good. The most boring quote of all time. Thanks. okay, so you can't be wrong.
Okay,
this is
what's
your
question?
If you were to see one Harrison Ford walking down the street, your immediate thought would be, holy cow, there's Indiana Jones. Or it would be, holy cow, that's Han Solo.
Oh, easy, because this has happened to me, and it's Han Solo.
Whoa.
I was on 9th Avenue in Manhattan by the Chelsea Market with my kids. This was probably 5 years ago. And he walked out of a restaurant called Budokan, he walked out of it. And I stopped in my tracks, and I'm a New Yorker. We don't freak out when we see famous people. It kind of comes with the territory. You have to act extra cool about it.
Sure.
But Harrison Ford stopped dead in my tracks, and my kids were clueless. They had seen, you know, Indiana Jones. They'd seen Han Solo, but I was like, oh, they're like, who, Mom? Who? I said, it's Han Solo. And I think I said that because I thought maybe my son, especially who was older at the time, would connect with that more than Indiana Jones. I don't know why. And then I went on, and Indiana Jones was a close second.
Gotcha. So, now, do you think Harrison Ford was then turning, saying, "Holy cow, that's Maggie Matheson right there"?
No, this could have been before. This could have predated Homeland.
It was before Homeland.
But actually, fun fact: I worked with Calista Flockhart years ago in a little HBO film.
Oh wow!
So he could have been like, "Oh, are they married? I know they're together." But he could have thought, "Oh, there's my, you know, my life companion's co-star from the 1993 HBO special called The Secret Life of Mary Margaret Carter."
Oh, okay. There you go.
Let's be honest, Amy. He said that's Kimberly from Brain Scan. That's what he said.
Yes, or perhaps that. Yes, the classic. Oh my goodness.
So I got a question. What do you think of all the comic book movies that are out now? Have you ever thought of getting in any of those, or trying to? It seems like a lot of actors are. It's a good step.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm very, very happy to. Right now, I've been like straddling for the last bit of time. I've been straddling the worlds of independent film and great TV, and I feel really, really fortunate to be working in those areas. Now, if some like Marvel movie wanted to come and drop a whole bag of money in my checking account to have me come and play some sort of bad guy or a CIA agent or something in some huge movie, would I be up for that? Absolutely. That would be a ton of fun. Yes, I could be a helicopter mom. Because, it's, that's kind of where the bigger budget films are now. It's all those, tent pole-y kind of things. Honestly, I don't go and see those movies very often. But sure, if it's a great story, if it's a fun story and fun character and an interesting director, it doesn't really matter if it's on stage or a huge film or a small film.
If you ever want to hear of any shows that are coming out, there's a podcast called Take Two. You might want to check that out. There's a lot of interesting talk about movies and such.
Do you guys talk about like big like Marvel movies and all that stuff?
We do a lot of comic movies. We talk about we touch everything because we do a lot of the television stuff. Good. That's why we watched you. We do a lot of Netflix and Amazon Prime. That's how we caught on to you.
Are you then very excited about My Friend Dahmer?
Yes, that looks very good with the kid who was in Austin and Allen.
Ross Lynch. Yeah, I bring it up because it's I worked with the writer director called Mark Myers on his last film called How We Fell in Love, which was kind of an affair movie basically, and he's definitely changed it up for his next feature, and it was a story about Jeffrey Dahmer in high school, and I think they're getting a release in the fall, so check. But anyway, I mentioned it because it's based on a graphic novel. So
gotcha. Now How We Fell in Love was
a hard departure from How He Fell in Love, because I've seen that because it's on Netflix now, and it's definitely quite Netflix. Different than that movie.
Exactly.
That was in LA Film Fest too, right? How We Fell in Love.
Yes. Yep. We premiered the LA Film Festival, and we had the theatrical release last summer bopped onto to Netflix and all the other platforms, iTunes and whatnot.
Let's see. You're from Long Island. Are you a Mets fan?
I am.
Oh,
by default, I'm not a huge baseball fan, but like because my dad and my brother like the Mets, so I'm like, okay, I'll like the Mets too. And I was actually, here's a fun fact: when I was very young, I was at that game six, and when the ball went through the Bill Buckner's feet, and the parachute just landed on the pitcher's mound. I was there with my dad.
Wow.
In the game, the World. Yeah, I know. I think I have the ticket stub somewhere. I was very young. I barely remember it, but it was fun. What I do remember was fun.
Very cool. All right, going forward, you have Wonderstruck coming out later this year in November, I believe.
Yep, that's right. Yep, that I have a little supporting role in an amazing film, and working with Todd Haynes was a dream. And I have another cool indie called Super Dark Times that is also being released in the fall with a first-time feature director called Kevin Phillips. That's very cool. And that's with a couple of the same producers who produced Blue Ruin produced Super Dark Times. So it was nice to kind of reconnect with those people because they're great.
Yeah. Mm.
And then any 13 Reasons Season 2 stuff you can tell us? Are you guys start filming yet?
We start filming in June.
Woo,
scrambling to get ready.
Awesome.
So it's coming soon. But if I tell you anything else besides that, I will be fired. So I need to keep
we figure, but we had to
we
try.
We literally just got it. We just got an email last night that was like, "Don't say anything to anybody about anything."
We figured. We've been throwing out ideas of what we thought this season two would be. So it'd be interesting to see what it would be. We're hoping maybe you could.
I will say that they're, the writers left us with quite a few fascinating threads that still needed to be kind of addressed at the end of season one, and a lot of those will be addressed. That's all I can say.
Well, Amy, thank you again so much for coming on our show. We really appreciate your time. Amy Cargraves from 13 Reasons Why. Thank you for coming on Take Two Podcast. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. It was super fun. Yeah,
thank
and we'll
you
talk again.
Us your
Thanks.
Time. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Amy.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.